Chapter 5 The End Straightaway. They were of Clan Battlehammer. This he knew as he silently slipped past the torn dwarf body. Stokely Silverstream had warned of this. They had found some of the Icewind Dale dwarves battered but alive in the tunnels immediately around the forge room and the chambers the drow house had taken as its home. But for those deeper in the mines, the hunter looked at the ankle cuff binding the dwarf to the stone. The poor fellow had nearly torn his foot off trying to slip free of it, because he had known, as the hunter knew now, the tunnels were thick with demons. Around a corner in the low lichen glow, the hunter saw another dwarf victim, or pieces of the poor lass at least. He slid Tolmeril back over his shoulder and drew out his scimitars. He wanted to see the beasts up close. He wanted to feel the heat of their spilling blood. This was the darkness of the Underdark, where abyssal creatures were surely at home. But this was the home of the drow, too, and the hunter was their perfect incarnation. He caught a snuffling sound up ahead, around a left-hand corner, and recognized that some beast had caught his scent. The corridor ended at that corner, but went to the right as well, so going fast around it would expose his back to any allies of the creature. He glanced back at the torn dwarf, and he cared. He glanced ahead at the intersection, imagined the potential trap, and the hunter did not care. He went around the corner in a blur, hands working furiously before he ever came in sight of the creature, scoring a first hit before he realized the identity of this demon, a Balgura, a dwarf-like thug 2 feet taller than the hunter and thrice his girth, and that bulk all muscle and heavy bone. Icing death dug into the demon's shoulder, and the brute howled when the scimitar bit at its abyssal core. Around came the beast, a huge hammer swinging, and the hunter dived back into a roll, disengaging his blade. The corridor shook violently under the weight of that blow. Stones and dirt tumbled from above, and the hunter realized the trap as he came around, noting a trio of emaciated manes ambling in at him. He started for the Balgura, but cut back fast, spinning and slashing, then boring ahead, his blades tearing and chopping with every step, sending bits of these least demons flying. He went through them like a mole through soft dirt, burrowing and chopping and shoving aside the dying husks. He heard the heavy footsteps of the Balgura behind him and thought to dive into a roll and bring forth his bow. But no, this was personal. He wanted to feel the heat of its spilling blood. He stopped and spun, ducking so low that his bum touched the stone floor, the heavy hammer sweeping over his head to smash into the corridor wall once more. Up came the hunter, flipping his scimitars in his hands and digging their tips into the heavy-set demon with overhand chops, walking them up the way he might use them to climb an ice sheet. On pure instinct, before he was even consciously aware of the move, he threw his legs out behind him and up high, his form parallel to the floor, and the backhand swing of the lumbering demon swiped harmlessly below him. His feet touched down, and he quick-stepped forward, but threw his shoulders back, tearing free the blades and rolling straight back to avoid another corridor-rattling swing. The opponents paused and squared off, and the hunter saw pain in the Balgura's black eyes. And saw the lines of blood streaming from the wounds, particularly the deep shoulder cuts. And the hunter felt that blood on his own bare forearms, and he was glad. In he charged as the Balgura brought its heavy hammer behind it for an overhead chop. The hunter's blades worked a dizzying blur, stabbing and slashing, and into the air he went, diving forward, scimitars crossed. He passed over the squat creature and tucked fast, setting the crook of his blades against the rising warhammer. He lifted over the warhammer, twisting and pressing, and only finally releasing it as he spun to land lightly. Not so agile was the Balgura, caught by surprise by the bold and speedy move, its balance and weight all askew. It hopped weirdly, barely able to still bring the hammer over its head, and it stumbled as it did, crashing shoulder first into the corridor wall. With a roar of protest, the demon bounced off that stone and whirled about. "I wear no shackles," proclaimed the hunter, who was too close by then. In bore his blades, and this time, when icing death found the abyssal creature's throat, the hunter did not retract. He pressed in all the harder, Twinkle working independently to keep the demon's grasping hand aside, and to repeatedly dart under the extended icing death to stab at the arm that still held the warhammer. Like a trained fighting dog, the hunter would not let go. Icing death feasted, and the Balgura howled, and the Balgura died. With an angry twist of his wrist, the hunter cut the demon's throat as it slumped to the floor. A roar from behind, from the corridor where he had first turned, and the hunter had his bow in hand, fitting an arrow so fluidly that it would have appeared to any onlookers that the missile had been set on the bowstring all along. A second Balgura bore down on him, crossing the perpendicular corridor. But the hunter held his shot. Out of that corridor came another form, a lithe form not unlike his own. A slender blade led, plunging through the Balgura's side. The demon howled and threw itself against the far wall, trying to turn and keep up as the second drow sped behind it, the blade working fast, thrust and retract, and so cleanly and smoothly did it travel, deep into the demon's muscle and gristle with every plunge, that the hunter could only watch in appreciation. With undeniable skill and perfect aim, the drow drove the deadly weapon home again and again, and always was he one stride ahead of the turning, dying demon. When at last it crumbled in death, the second drow was once more between the hunter and the newest kill, and Drizzt recognized him by his outrageous hat before he even turned about and dipped a polite bow. "Well met again, my old friend," Jarlaxle said, and he saluted with a sword Drizzt knew well, Cassitea, the sword more commonly known as Cutter. Curiously, though, another blade rested on Jarlaxle's hip, where he would normally sheathe Cutter. "I have searched long for you," Jarlaxle said, "though not as long as I might have feared," he added with a chuckle, kicking at the Balgura Drizzt had killed. "You do leave a trail of easily followed crumbs." "As bait for the other demons," Drizzt explained. "Let them find me and make my hunt easier." "There are some powerful foes down here," Jarlaxle warned. "I have not yet even brought Guinevere to my side. I will save her until I find another Marilith, perhaps." Bigger foes, Jarlaxle thought, but did not say. He had been apprised of the events in full, and believed that several of the demon lords had come into the Underdark with hosts of major demons with them. "You came to join in my hunt, then?" Drizzt said. "I'm glad for the company." "You came to find any more survivors from Icewind Dale?" Drizzt solemnly shook his head, certain that none would be found alive. "So you stay to exact vengeance?" "To clear the corridors for King Brunner's people," Drizzt corrected, though the thoughts were not mutually exclusive, and both were true. "I will join in your hunt, then, if you will have me," said Jarlaxle. "But that is not why I have come, my friend." Drizzt looked at him curiously, not sure what to expect. "I have tidings, many, both dark and hopeful, from the lower tunnels," Jarlaxle explained. "Come, let us be gone from this fetid place. I will set us a fine dinner." "A dinner, down here?" "The growl you hear is no demon, but my belly, and I am sure I will die of starvation before I find my way back to Brunner's halls, even if my path is clear all the way. Come." Drizzt shook his head, reminding himself never to be surprised by Jarlaxle, and found himself yet again quite astonished. As Jarlaxle turned, Drizzt caught a better view of the sword that hung on his belt. It was a sword Drizzt knew well, Karin's Claw, the blade Drizzt had watched Artemis and Treri throw into the primordial pit. "How?" he blurted. And Jarlaxle swung back, then followed Drizzt's gaze down to the distinctive skeletal hilt and red blade of that most wicked weapon. Surely you know me better than to expect me to leave such a treasure as Karin's claw lying in the hot stones of a pit, Jarlaxle innocently replied. You went down there to retrieve... No, Jarlaxle said casually, and he turned back and started away. Your wife did. Drizzt stood there stunned for a few moments. He scrambled and caught up to Jarlaxle around a bend in the corridor and into a side chamber, where the mercenary was already preparing his banquet. From a magical pouch came a table, cleverly folded so that it opened again and again to become a rectangular table as long as Drizzt was tall, and half that width. Chairs followed, and a fine linen tablecloth as well, with plates and fine silver, large drinking goblets, and all from a pouch barely larger than the one Drizzt wore to hold the onyx figurine that summoned Guinevar. From some secret pocket inside his cloak, Jarlaxle produced a wand, and from it came a meal fit for Brunner's table on the highest holiday of the dwarven year. Sit, Jarlaxle bade Drizzt, and eat. We have much to talk about. A groan back in the corridor alerted them that they were not alone. Drizzt turned and reached for his blades, but Jarlaxle held his hand up to stop him, then reached his other hand to the huge feather stuck into the band of his grand hat. He threw it down, summoning a gigantic flightless bird, a diatrima, with a huge beak that could break through a skull with ease and massive legs that would make fine drumsticks for the gods of the giants. Off it went with a squawk that echoed about the stones. Barely had it turned the corner into the corridor when the first demon manes let out a great gasp, a burst of air flying from its suddenly torn lungs. Jarlaxle motioned for Drizzt to sit and took his own seat opposite, carefully laying Kazitea onto the table. Drizzt did likewise with his bow and put the onyx figurine of Guinevar within easy reach as well. Jarlaxle tore a leg from the beautifully browned turkey set on a silver platter and hoisted his large mug filled with fine ale and toast. To friends, he said. Drizzt lifted his own mug and nodded his agreement. You understand why the dwarves won so easily, do you not? Jarlaxle asked. But then he paused, held up his hand to prevent a response, and shook his head, his expression one of disgust as he considered the tumult coming from the hallway. He reached for his belt pouch again, then reconsidered, and went for a second pouch instead. He brought out a tiny stringed instrument with an even smaller bow, and he tossed it into the air. And there it hung, and it began to play. Much better, Jarlaxle said, when the music drowned out the noise of ripping and tearing flesh out in the corridor, and Drizzt could only shake his head helplessly and laugh. Now to the point, Jarlaxle went on. You understand why the dwarves so easily won? The hundreds of dead might not agree with that description of the victory. True enough, Jarlaxle conceded. Nor do I mean to minimize your own struggles, particularly with the great demons you defeated in the main chamber of the lower level. Truly, that was a fight to remember. I don't know that I have ever seen you fight better, and I have witnessed many of your battles over the years. I fought with grand allies, said Drizzt, and that is why the dwarves won. Indeed, and they would have prevailed in any case. But not as easily. Must I remind you of the power of a drow noble house? Surely you remember. And this was House Orlaren, my friend, thick with deadly wizards more than ready to send 1,000 of Brunner's kin to the grave in short order. But they did not, said Drizzt, catching on. Because of... Jarlaxle smiled. I have known Matron Mother Xerith most of her life, the mercenary explained. She is a most reasonable creature. I know that's hard for you to believe, but I ask that you trust me on this observation. You convinced her to depart, and to surrender, Drizzt replied. He knew much of this already, from the surrender of Matron Mother Xerith in the primordial chamber, when she had returned the Harpal prisoners and Stokely Silverstream in exchange for her own exit into the Underdark. Have you seen any signs of them? Jarlaxle asked. Or of any drow? Drizzt shook his head. Why not, do you suppose? The tunnels are thick with demons. Surely a matron mother of a drow house and her high priestesses could convince more than a few to go and cause havoc among the dwarves as they settle into their new home. How do I know they have not? Drizzt replied. Demons are all around, perhaps at Matron Mother Zira's behest. They have not, Jarlaxle assured him. House Orlarin is far removed from this place and will honor the terms of their surrender. And yes, my friend, because of my efforts. Then I lift my flagon in honor of Jarlaxle, Drizzt said, and he did just that. At great expense, Jarlaxle added. No doubt. And now I wish something from you. You did this as a requisite for a favor? Drizzt asked. Then truly you wound me. Why did you think I did it? Out of respect and friendship, I dared to hope. Was I wrong? Jarlaxle laughed, and now it was his turn to salute Drizzt. Then I ask you as a friend, and because it is the right thing to do, Jarlaxle said, after a big gulp of ale and a large bite of delicious turkey. I need you to come with me. Where? Home. I am home, Drizzt said, mostly because he simply had to deny what Jarlaxle seemed to be hinting at. Matron Mother Bayenri has reconstituted House Doerden. They are no kin to me, no blood and no family. Of course not. Jarlaxle agreed. They are mostly Zorlarans now, and my own soldiers. She did it to sully my name, I expect, given the liberal use of the house name in the War of the Silver Marches. I can think of nothing more pathetic, and I hardly care, nor should you. You are far removed from that house and that city, but, Jarlaxle said, leaning forward and prodding Drizzt with a half-eaten turkey leg to emphasize his point. You should care about the new matron mother of House Doerden. She is someone well known to you, and someone desperately in need of your help. Drizzt stared at his counterpart blankly, his thoughts dancing about the decades as he tried to recall the fate of all those priestesses he had known in Menzo Berenzon, the only one he could think of who would remotely satisfy Jarlaxle's claims was his sister, Vierna. But Vierna was dead, long dead, Drizzt knew all too well. He had killed her with his own blade. Dahlia, Jarlaxle said, and Drizzt found it hard to breathe. Yes, it is true, Jarlaxle assured the incredulous ranger. Dahlia is no drow, she is Darthir, a surface elf, and indeed that is the name Matron Mother Bayenri has given to her. Matron Mother Darthir Doerden. Drizzt shook his head in disbelief, stumbling over words he could not find. She is no more than a puppet, of course, Jarlaxle explained. Bayenri uses her to insult the other matron mothers. Indeed, Dahlia sits on the ruling council, her mind too broken for her to serve as anything more than an echo for whatever Matron Mother Bayenri declares. She will not live long, of course. Already several of the other matron mothers have tried to murder her. They will succeed eventually, or Bayenri will grow tired of her and will destroy her. This cannot be. I have no reason to lie to you, Jarlaxle said. Dahlia is a pitiful and broken thing, but her soul is still in her corporeal form, trapped in a web of ultimate confusion wrought upon her by Matron Mother Bayenri's pet illithid. Kimmoriel has looked inside her thoughts, and yes, I insist again, she is still in there. She understands her plight, and she is quite terrified every moment of every day. And you want me to go back to Menzo Berenzon beside you to rescue her? Drizzt asked, with intonations of utter disbelief dripping from every syllable. I have a plan. Make a better one. Tiago Beanri is the weapons master of House Doerden, Jarlaxle said. The mere mention of his name brought a sneer to Drizzt's lips and brought another thought to him. What of Dumuil? Cast out by Gromf. She is alive, I believe. I have agents searching for her. I do expect that rescuing that one will be more difficult than the hunt for Dahlia. Not physically, of course, but if Dahlia is a confused soul with a battered mind, then Dumuil is a truly broken and fallen sort. There is not enough water washing against the Sword Coast to clean the blood from Dumuil's young hands. Drizzt dropped a wingbone to his plate, propped his elbow on the table and put his head in his hands, staring at Jarlaxle all the while. Tiago will come for you again, of course, Jarlaxle said. His obsession is complete and undaunted, and he will bring many friends, truly powerful friends. So you want me to go to him instead? The look on his face alone will be worth the journey, I expect. Forgive me for not agreeing with that assessment. Dahlia will not survive long, Jarlaxle said flatly. Already she is wearing out her usefulness to Matron Mother Beanri. Her death will be most unpleasant, if they even allow her to escape into the peace of death. You have many resources at your fingertips, Drizzt reminded him. Why do you need me? There are many reasons, but they are my own, Jarlaxle replied. All you need to know is that I do need you, and that we can do this. Dahlia can be free and the threat of Tiago removed. Then my psionicist friend can repair her broken mind. So I ask you as my friend to stand beside me, and yes, I offer in exchange my own work in helping your friend King Brunner regain this place, and my continuing efforts to make sure he holds it, from the Drow and from the Primordial. And that is no small thing. Drizzt could hardly wrap his mind around any of this. All the memories of Dahlia, once his lover and traveling companion, came flooding back to him. They had been close, very close, and though he had never grown to love her as he had loved, and once again loved, Catti Bree, Drizzt could not deny that he still cared for Dahlia, or at least that he cared what happened to her. Of course, he also couldn't deny that she had attacked him on the slopes of Kelvin's Cairn, and had inflicted a wound that would have surely proven mortal had not Catti Bree and the others found him up there, dying under the stars. And it will be a great service to another you have come to know as a friend, Jarlaxle went on. Had his thoughts been focused on Jarlaxle's words, Drizzt would have easily guessed that Jarlaxle referred to Artemis and Treri, particularly given the weapon hanging at his hip. But Drizzt wasn't focusing on much at that stunning moment, his mind bouncing from past to present and back again as all the years of his journey compressed into this one moment. He could go with Jarlaxle, but what if he did and they failed, and he was caught in the city of his birth? What if he was slain trying to rescue a former lover, and so was taken from his beloved wife for the sake of Dahlia? Catti Bree is engaged in her own struggle, Jarlaxle said, as if reading his mind, which Drizzt realized would be no great feat. He was surely echoing every thought with his expressions. Archmage Gromf assists her only because of me, of course, and because of my stake in Luskin, which offers to him, and to King Brunner and all his designs, the only true hope. Again, you hint that I owe this. No, no, Jarlaxle said, holding up his hands and shaking his head emphatically. I only hope that you see me as I see you, as a friend, and one to be trusted. Before Drizzt could digest the words, before he could respond, there came a louder roar from the corridor, followed by a shriek of Jarlaxle's monstrous pet bird, one that told the pair that their meal was about to be interrupted. Come, Jarlaxle said, leaping up, taking up Cassidea and drawing Karin's claw as well. To the play! Drizzt and Jarlaxle went out together, side by side, Guinevere close behind, they found a cluster of a dozen demons, Balgura, Manes, and even a pair of gigantic, four-armed Glabrezu, waiting for them. The demons were sorely outnumbered.
"Ye cannot begin to be thinking of such a thing," Catti Bree said,
and her reversion to that thick dwarvish brogue warned Drizzt to tread lightly. Aye, but she had that look in her eye, and when it came to this, her tongue could be a greater weapon than the scimitars on his belt.
"Have ye lost your mind, then, ye derned fool?"
she lashed out. Drizzt started to reply, to explain that Jarlaxle was doing a great service to the dwarves, and that he was deserving of their trust, even in this seemingly suicidal mission. But the ranger gave up after a few whispered words, realizing it was futile. He had just hit his wife with his intention to stroll into the city of spiders. She deserved to express a few moments of outrage.
"Oh, but ain't we a couple of sly and clever dark elves, me and me friend Jarlaxle?"
Catti Bree went on, imitating Drizzt's posture and striking a most unflattering pose.
"Just walking into Menzo Berenzon so casual and easy that they'll think we belong and won't be cutting our heads off. Bah! But if I e'er heard a more stupid plan, then I'm not for remembering it."
"I remember one time when you walked into Menzo Berenzon alone," Drizzt said. And as soon as the words left his mouth, he wished he could have taken them back. On that dark occasion, she had done so only because of his own foolishness. Catti Bree slugged him in the shoulder.
"You're a damned fool,"
she said, her voice suddenly more resonant with fear and sorrow than with anger.
"You cannot go,"
she decided, and crossed her arms over her chest. "Did you not just float into the pit of a primordial beast of fire?
Not the same thing.
No, worse.
Not so.
Of course it is so," Drizzt argued. "For all your tricks and magic, and that ring I gave you, you cannot know the heart of the primordial. And for all your wards, for all your power, we both know that the beast could have incinerated you." He paused and tried to assume a more understanding and sympathetic posture, but still indignantly snapped his fingers in the air.
"Like that,"
he said. "And you would have been no more than a charred pile of bones to be swallowed by the magma. They would not even have known, nor would Brunner nor anyone else unless Jarlaxle chose to share the information. And would he have admitted it to us had he caused your fiery death?"
"He just said ye trusted him."
Drizzt couldn't hold his stern expression in light of the way Catti Bree had made the offhand remark. Despite it all, he giggled just a bit, and so did Catti Bree, and she threw her arms around him and wrapped him in a hug.
"I'm just scared,"
she whispered in his ear.
"I know," he said with a growl. Then, "I know," in a more conciliatory and understanding tone. "How do you think I feel, knowing that you'll be working beside the mighty and merciless Archmage of Menzo Berenzon, trying to reignite some ancient magic that is—" He sighed and buried his face in her hair.
"But I'm trusting ye,"
Catti Bree said. Drizzt pushed her out to arm's length, locked her rich blue eyes with his lavender ones, and slowly nodded his understanding and acceptance.
"I'm not wanting to go through this life without ye," the woman said.
"I have already seen life without you," Drizzt replied. "It is not something I wish to experience again." Catti Bree hugged him tighter.
"Do you think you can save her, Dahlia?"
"I don't know," Drizzt admitted. "She is in the spidery claws of Matron Mother Bayenry."
"So were you once,"
Catti Bree said, and Drizzt squeezed her a bit tighter. "I have to try," Drizzt said. "We owe this to Jarlaxle, and I owe it to Entreri."
"I'm not thinking you're owing anything to that one. Ye spared him his life on more than one occasion, and that's better than he's deserving."
Drizzt really had no retort, even though he disagreed. So complicated was his relationship with the former assassin. And indeed, despite everything that had occurred both ways, he did feel that he owed it to Entreri to make this try, desperate as it seemed.
And are ye thinking ye owe it to Dahlia? Catti Bree asked.
Drizzt pulled back and shrugged. She does not deserve this fate.
Ah, me husband, righting all the wrongs of the world.
Drizzt shrugged again, searching for an answer.
And that is why I love you,
Catti Bree said slowly and clearly. And she came forward again and gave Drizzt a deep and long kiss.
You go free her and bring her home. And if there is anything I can do to help heal her broken mind, you'll need not even to ask.
Drizzt felt as if his heart would explode at that moment. He pulled Catti Bree tight, so tight. He wanted to join with her then, as if he could somehow merge their souls into one brighter being, and he held her for a long, long while. He stepped back after a few moments, recalling another issue, and an important one. Here, he said, pulling the magical necklace with the unicorn head and golden horn over his head and handing it to her. I'll have no need of Andahar in the Underdark. And not in Menzo Berenzon, where the brilliant essence of a unicorn would surely announce my arrival. Catti Bree took the gift and nodded. She slipped it over her head, her hand touching the beautiful sculpture hanging upon her chest. And here, Drizzt added, reaching into his pouch to bring forth the onyx figurine of the panther, Guinevere. Catti Bree's eyes widened in shock.
I'm thinking you'll be needing that one,
she argued, holding forth her palm in denial of the gift. I've thought long on this, Drizzt assured her. I'm not bringing Guinevere back to Menzo Berenzon. She was created in Myth Draenor, so says the tale, but she was long in the city of Drow. Many know of her and many coveted her, including the family of those from whom I took her. I cannot risk it. Catti Bree started to protest, but Drizzt put his finger over her lips to silence her. If I am to die, then so be it, he said. This is the life I have chosen, and the code of behavior that I must follow. I can accept that. But I cannot accept Guinevere in the hands of a dark elf. I cannot reduce my dear companion to an existence as a tool of murder and chaos. She deserves better. If I am to die, then she deserves nothing less than you.
I'm thinking you're more likely to die without her at your side.
Drizzt didn't disagree, but neither did he retract his hand. I am with fine allies, worthy fighters both, and Jarlaxle with a million tricks I have not yet witnessed. If we are captured, he may be able to somehow buy us out of our dilemma, but never would we be allowed to take the precious Guinevere with us. He motioned the figurine toward her.
I cannot.
You must. I go with a heavy heart, but I accept that because I must do this, and because I know that if I am to perish in the City of Spiders, then so be it, because I say with all hope and faith that my friends are safe and thriving without me, that Brunner will sit on his throne and you will secure that seat, that Wulfgar and Regis have found adventure and enjoyment in the distant land of Delphuntal, and that Guinevere... Why, there's the rub. I cannot accept that my grand risk might condemn her to such an existence. He pushed the figurine at Catti Bree again, and nodded more than once until she at last took it from him. Keep her safe, he said.
If I have to come get you, then know that Guinevere will be by my side,
Catti Bree said, a clear reference to the last time Drizzt had walked into Menzo Berenzon. With 10,000 dwarves around you, I hope.
Aye,
she replied with a grin. He offered her his hand and started away, but Catti Bree tugged back hard, halting him.
One more thing,
she said when Drizzt turned back to regard her curiously. She paused and he shrugged, confused.
Tall Maril,
she said. Drizzt looked at her curiously.
She held up her free hand and beckoned with it. The bow. It is a hindrance to you as you flee about the tunnels. It was mine, I took it in Mithril Hall, and so Brunner and so you all gave it to me then. I would like it now.
Drizzt stared at her incredulously, but she just smiled calmly and beckoned again. Drizzt let go of her hand and stepped back. "The bow has been of great help to me in the tunnels," he stammered.
"And I will have it,"
Catti Bree demanded. She motioned to the bow with her hand again.
"You said you were with fine allies."
"And better to keep enemies at bay," Drizzt argued.
"And so I shall if it comes to that," the woman said evenly. "And Jarlaxle will do the same for you, no doubt."
"You would take..." Drizzt stammered and stuttered and shook his head when he found he had no response. He pulled Tolmeril over his shoulder. "I have used this in my adventures against the demons in the lower tunnels off of Mithril Hall," he explained again.
"Aye, and you used Guinevere too."
"Not the same," the confused Drow Ranger replied. "Are you trying to dissuade?"
"No,"
Catti Bree said with finality, then more gently.
"No."
The woman beckoned again.
"Trust me."
Now Drizzt's expression turned to one of curiosity, as he caught on that she had something in mind. He handed over Tolmeril, then reached around and removed the magical quiver that would afford him an endless supply of arrows to be enchanted and loosed by the magic of the great bow. Catti Bree nodded and slung the bow and quiver over her shoulder. They said no more then. There was nothing more to say. She would trust him as he trusted her. That was their unspoken agreement. They did not inhibit each other's journey, but rather trusted and encouraged those choices. But Drizzt knew there remained a loaded weight in that level of trust. It implied that he would make his choice as well. And on the surface, this particular choice to travel beside Jarlaxle to Menzo Berenzon could not seem a wise decision, even for the sake of Dahlia. And still, Drizzt knew that he was walking the right road. There was something more, something nagging at his very soul, some whispering notion that this road would prove an important part of his own journey, a measure of closure that he needed so that he could honestly go on with his life as planned. This was fated, he felt. Though Drizzt had never been one to believe in fate, or in the pre-planning of the gods, or any other such notions. He believed in free will and reason above all. He lived his life by that credo. Even in matters of faith, Drizzt placed his moral compass above any external edicts, and indeed, Mialiki was merely a name to what he knew was in his heart, though he had come to doubt that label of late. Still, this offer of adventure Jarlaxle had placed before him felt to him more like some road to lasting peace. If he succeeded, he suspected he would finally and forever put Menzo Berenzon behind him, or at least lock his awful experiences in that dark cavern into proper perspective. And yes, it was a great risk. Perhaps he would be slain, perhaps turned into a drider, perhaps sent into the abyss to serve as a slave to Loth forevermore. But even in the face of those grim possibilities, he had to do this. He and Catti Bree spent a long time alone then, expressing their love and respect as if it might be the last time. They went together and found Jarlaxle to bring along to tell King Brunner, whose excited response was, of course, perfectly predictable.
"Call out the boys," the dwarf proclaimed. "Oh, but we'll march with ye, elf, all of us, and we'll tear down every drow house and put a blade up every ugly, skinny drow bum."
He paused in his rant and looked at Jarlaxle.
"Well, excepting those ye tell us to let be, and then we'll be letting them be only if they keep them skinny bums out of our way."
"Brunner, no," Drizzt was finally able to say, and forcefully enough to halt the dwarf's momentum. Standing on the throne of the dwarven gods then, King Brunner looked at Drizzt curiously and said,
"Huh?"
"You have your work here," Drizzt said, "no less important. The tunnels are full of demons. The drow may return to Gontalgrim, and the host tower must be rebuilt, or it is all for naught anyway."
"Bah, but you think I'm to let ye walk off along to Menzo bury some drow?"
The play on the name gave Drizzt pause, enough for Jarlaxle to verbally wade into the conversation with, "Yes, that is exactly what we think, and what we demand." All around the group, dwarves gasped at the dark elf visitor's impertinence, especially with King Brunner standing atop the throne. "Were you to empty your halls, indeed all the halls of the Silver Marches, you'd not win a fight with Menzel Berenzon, good dwarf," Jarlaxle explained. "Not there. Not where all the houses would unite against you. You'd not get near to our goal."
"Trust them, Ida," Catti Bree said. She looked over at Drizzt and nodded. "They will not fail in this."
Brunner was clearly unable to come up with any answer that satisfied him or assuaged his all-too-obvious fears. He slowly melted back into the throne and heaved a great sigh.
"We're almost there, elf," he said quietly. "Can ye no feel it?"
"I do," Drizzt said. "And we are. To that place we've talked of since our days together on Kelvin's Cairn. Almost there. The winding road shows the end straight away."
"The door to home's in sight," Brunner said.
Many hugs later, Drizzt and Jarlaxle walked together into the Underdark side by side. Oftentimes, Jarlaxle lifted a hand to put it comfortingly on Drizzt's shoulder, and more than once, the mercenary whispered Brunner's last words, "The door to home's in sight."